Welcome to Real Flicks Reviews. We're like a book club for people who hate reading. This month, we're doing grab bags. So Ryan picked the movie Blade Runner, made in 1982. We bring you movie news. And this week, we have Jonathan Charney, James Stevens, and Ryan Preston. Here's the description of Blade Runner, 1982. A Blade Runner must pursue and try to terminate four replicants who stole a ship in space and have returned to Earth to find their creator.
Okay, hold on. I would like to start this discussion off. But first, I must point out that whoever wrote this description is an absolute moron. You don't just go into writing a description, assume that a person knows what the hell a Blade Runner is.
But that's
pretty dumb. It's using the word in the definition of the word.
Yeah.
Exactly. By the way, isn't that one of the reasons we picked reading descriptions from IMDb?
That's true, but this one is asininely dumb compared to
we've been making fun of them for 186
months that we've read them. All right.
Sometimes movies don't need a big description, but yeah, it's like Blade Runner. You're like, oh, I wonder what that's about.
Yeah.
You froze, Ryan.
They're like, oh, shit.
Yeah, I understand where he's going with it. So what I want to jump into this one is that this is the third time I've watched Blade Runner. And every time I've gone into this film, I try to do the blank slate thing. Like, I want to enjoy this film. And what I want to start out with is the first 40 minutes of this film, the cinematography and the effects, the set design, everything they put into the first 40 minutes of this movie is amazing. Like, just think about the first opening scene when they have the ship flying through the town and the atmosphere and everything around it is really, really, really well done. And then, you know, at that point, you can kind of forgive Harrison Ford's horrible detective dialogue in the background, things like that.
Are you talking about the narration?
I'm not talking about the narration. I'm talking about the actual visual effects of the film. The first 40 minutes are amazing.
Well, I mean, you were forgiving the dialogue in the back. It's just his dialogue or the narration you didn't like?
Their narration he did. I after a while, the narration kind of is like, all right, I see what you're doing. It's getting old and dry.
Well, see, this is one of the controversies of it. If I remember correctly, there's a couple of different versions. One has a narration, one doesn't. I remember reading somewhere that the studio, I think, and I could be wrong, wanted it. So there is some people who think the narration is an issue. So you're not alone in thinking that.
Okay.
I think it kind of gives it almost a Max Payne-ish narration, which
give or take.
I mean, I kind of like I don't know. I'd kind of classify this as maybe a little bit of space noir.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what it is. It's a 1920s detective story with, you know, sentient robots. I mean, hence the narration, hence the old school. I mean, you know, goes into the dungeons of this dystopian, futuristic LA, only to find the world's oldest, police station hidden behind the same glass door from 200 years before.
True. Now, the thing about that I was saying is the first 40 minutes of the film is really well done, and then it just pretty much gets dry. You get to the point where you're just like, somebody turn on a freaking light. You guys don't have lights anywhere?
Well, that's a little Ridley Scott sort of style, which actually kind of lends to the, you know, most people do this kind of thing, and it's all big colors and way more neon. I think he had the obligatory, like two scenes with neon signs for the 80s.
Yeah.
But nowhere near as heavily as most people leaned on it. And not one band performance in this entire movie.
Yeah.
There was a couple of moments where I started hearing this electronic synth shit, and I thought, like, oh, fuck, here comes Madonna, you know, about to do, like, her breakout song that year. It's the kind of things you'd see in 80s movies.
I've seen this movie a couple of times, mainly when I was younger. There's a lot I like about this movie. The one thing, like James was saying, the lack of light, I actually liked because this adds credence to more like this is like a 1930s, 1920 when the black and white was a character. This is the first movie I might have ever seen where the lack of light is being a character in the movie.
Well,
it leads up to the dark and dingy. This is definitely the beginning of the 80s dystopian future movies, which I'm a big fan of.
I could see that. My point is that I think it was excessively used.
See, I actually thought it was perfect.
I thought it was excessive.
Because I think it added to the, when you, Tyrell Corporation, when you went up to the big wigs office, when you saw it was like, you know, beautiful, you saw the sun and Deckard had to say it was too bright.
Yeah.
I actually thought that was a perfect metaphor for this guy is above everybody else. He's rich and he can buy sunlight.
A little mix of a Fifth Element type thing where the rich people are up top, the poor people
and
are lower.
That's one of the reasons I was awestruck by it, because this movie is absolutely beautiful, even though it's like, what, 3 years from happening?
And you know, that's the funny thing is, I mean, it despite the handful of sort of 80s things that most people seem to not be able to avoid, this movie kind of transcended the time period, which is really hard to do. I mean, they went way the hell out of their way to like James said, I mean, all the set design and the visual effects in the beginning. And by the way, I love in all dystopian futures, dirigibles make a comeback. It's one thing that I really, really look forward to the, Orwellian future.
The other thing I wanted to point out is, for me, like I said, there's like a 45 minute is where I'm pretty much done with this film every time. And I took a nap. To be honest, guys, I stopped this film and I laid down and took a nap. That's kind of where the film.
Well, look, if you've seen it a couple of times before, I understand where you're coming from. They did seem to go with a much slower pace in a movie that doesn't need that kind of a slow burn.
The slower pace didn't bother me. It was just I lost absolute interest.
You have like an action sequence and they're trying to like chase each other, but it's a lot of cat and mouse that goes on for way too long.
When I was a kid, when I saw this, I couldn't stand this movie. I generally like this movie now. Don't get me wrong, I could never watch this more than once within 6 months to a year time span. But I really love the slow burn on this movie. As adult and kind of a movie buff now, there's a lot I appreciate. The slow burn, I think, really adds to all that noir-esque, the struggle he's having as a guy who's tired of killing things that look like people. Like he talks about the shakes and his constant drinking and how he's being dragged back into a career he thought he left behind. I even like how they mention how these biomechanical humans even like develop obsessions with things, and the creators are trying to figure out why he's doing this. They even did this in the robot movie with Will Smith. Talked about how iRobot, how code would jumble and nobody's sure why they do certain things or why they circle around light. Well, so I
like
that. One
of the things that I think that you're hitting on a lot of points, but I think one of the big points of this film is the memories. And that they kind of get to a point where he's even questioning his own memories and his own existence, because at some point you kind of – the things as a child – kind of get fuzzy the older you get.
Yeah.
So he's at a point in his life where he's kind of like questioning a few things, and you kind of see that. I think that part of the film was actually really well done. I like the acting in that, and that is part of that slow burn, because you see it developing in his mind as he's interacting with the lead lady's name. I can't think of her name.
And
Raquel.
Lieutenant Einhorn.
Raquel. Yes, yeah. Lieutenant Einhorn.
And I would also say this movie's kind of, in my opinion, kind of almost a who's who. You've got the legendary actor Harrison Ford, Rutger Hauer, Sean Young.
He wasn't legendary at the time.
He is now.
Yeah, no, I mean, he was like the Tom Cruise, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like
that,
Mission Impossible.
That's, well, Rutger Hauer, that's one of the reasons though. I think this, like, now I think this is a legendary cast. Sean Young, Edward James Olmos, M. Emmett Walsh, Daryl Hannah.
Walsh, yeah. And then you got the other guy, the.
Even like.
Joe Turkel.
Brian, B-R-I-O-N, James. The casting in this movie is probably as close to being perfect as you could ever have, in my opinion.
I mean, it was kind of a two of really good character actors. The guy that played. I should have looked this up. Was it JF something? The bio. Guy
The old guy.
Yeah, well, the 25-year-old who had aged. That guy's been in a ton of things, and he's a great character actor.
Oh, yeah. I love that was one of my favorite scenes. Oh, I'm 25. What happened to you? It's like the robots are rubbing it in a little.
There was some overacting going on between Daryl Hannah, Rutger Hauer, and Harrison Ford. I mean, some really big exaggerated movements, like they were on stage somewhere.
I do think that is the problem with the particular genre I think this really is in. I think that's part of the noir-esque.
I don't know if that was part of the noir. I think that was stylistic kind of part choice? Of, you know, like the sci-fi, sort of the way it reads on the page, maybe something to do with the, you know, adapting that kind of a story, something. It's that kind of shit that always comes out of the wash and kind of makes it look like a B movie, but it redeems it because you have really good actors.
True. Like if this, you know, say like if this was made today and they'd have today's actors, it would definitely be crappy.
So
right. By the way, I need to revive Rutger Hauer's career and have him play Donald Trump. Did anybody else notice he looked exactly like him?
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
I can see it. It's his freaking doppelganger.
Now, okay, I want to get back to a couple things. One of the things about the antagonist that kind of bothered me, he seemed a little conish to me.
Who?
The antagonist, the main guy, the leader of the synth guys. He seemed a little bit. Actually, Ryan just said his name, the Hauer guy.
Rutger Hauer. And did you just call Hauer. Him a synth?
Yeah, I did call him a synth. I've been playing Fallout at people, so.
You know,
he's a synth.
I kind of agree because it seems, at least my guess, towards the end of the movie, he was probably coming close to his end of his lifespan,
was kind of the point of the film.
And he knew that there, in the back of his mind, he knew there was no way to save himself. So I kind of agree. It seems like he took himself and his other synths to. Kind of blaze of glory. Thanks to you, I don't remember what they're actually called now.
I can't either now. They retire them.
Replicants.
Replicants, thank you.
Yeah.
And
the Nexus 6 design.
The other thing that kind of bothered me, and I probably picked this up last time, is, I guess I got to say, Harrison Ford, I'm glad that you learned no means no. And when she's walking out the door, don't block the door. I mean, because that seemed to belittle the sex scene between him and the replicant. Seemed a bit of like, you know, Cosby Jello stuff going on there. I mean,
there was a little aggressive behavior in that scene.
Yeah, he's like, you say yes now.
Well, it's like, that,
really, dude?
But that was one of the, I think that was one point where him being a Blade Runner, she's not real. So this is the moment he's dehumanizing her, but somehow he falls in love.
I don't think that was the implication. I think that's the way we read it today. I think at the time it was that guy taking 80s
sexy
kinda, that I'm raping you now.
Yeah. the kind of shit you'd see in like a cologne or perfume commercial.
Yeah.
So it's black and white.
The one thing I'd say is my favorite, one of my all time favorite quotes in this movie is the very last scene with Rutger Hauer, and it's kind of like pretty much what it is. It's him lamenting the loss of himself. Was this line, I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on the fire off the shoulder of Orion. I've watched sea beams glitter in the dark near Townhauser Gates. All those moments will be lost in time like tears in the rain. I loved that right there is pretty much the entire movie in a sentence. That was amazing to me. I loved that scene.
Well, aside from sort of the kind of, you know, sort of detective / assassin movie they were trying to make, I mean, the message was pretty simple, you know, allegories to, you know, civil rights, and we're all more alike than we think. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Realistically, this movie doesn't have much of a plot, but I think it makes up for the lack of plot in some of the characters and the way the sets are designed and the universe it's in, I think covers up the lack of a plot very well, like masterfully.
Yeah. And I think for the amount of money that they did this for, I mean, with as much as they did, I mean, it looked like, I mean, like today it would be a $90 million movie. And I mean, they did it for what, 25, you know, in 82.
That was pretty big budget.
According to this, according to IMDb, the budget was $28 million estimated.
Spent their money well, right? So, and the kind of things, I mean, if you're kind of paying attention, I mean, it was a lot of, you know, and they kind of said as far as like the languages, you know, that everyone speaks, the gutter talk. The mix of Japanese and German and French and all these other things.
They you just mean the ripoff of the idea of Yiddish?
But you can kind of see that in the architecture and the set design and the decor of the whole thing. I mean, a lot of Egyptian sort of architecture with
especially the Tyrell Corporation.
Yeah,
right. And then not to mention all the Asian decor. I mean, it's all this like collected stuff, but still all
China runs the world.
Futuristic.
And this, in my opinion, this movie is so revolutionary in a lot of that design. I think we saw copycats of that through the 80s,
Tron,
and 90s, and even now.
I think people are still trying to pull off that feeling, you know, of that creating a whole new world.
Yeah.
Oh no, totally. Because it's so. I don't know. To me, it's so obvious, like how much they're copying off that. Because I would say, even in my opinion, Outland was made before it, but there's similarities. Well, there's similarities to it in this. Well, it's a dystopian future, but I think parts of it carry through.
Can I help you?
Yeah.
Fifth Element.
I actually wouldn't say Fifth Element as much.
Think about it.
What do you think, Ryan?
As far as what?
Being like a Blade Runner. See, I disagree.
The world they created. Oh, yeah,
Fifth Element was very much a Blade Runner. I mean, it might have even been sort of my Blade Runner.
I would say it's my Blade Runner.
Yeah, that movie was ahead of its time and still underrated.
If you're talking about the universe created, I would say yes. If you're talking about
the universe created, not really the plot comparison.
If you're talking about the hard-boiled detective story, then I'd say no. But then I would agree within the confines of the universe? Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the universe they created in comparison to this one, Blade Runner, and I think Fifth Element are a perfect example.
I'll agree with you, because Zurg is Tyrell.
Yeah.
I'll agree.
I mean, unless you want me to go to Demolition Man.
Okay, I'm going to hear this.
What? In the universe they created, it's still an apocalyptic universe where a corporation takes over the world, i.e. Taco Bell, for one, and jingles and things like that. I mean, I could totally run off with this. Do you really want me to do it?
But at the same time, I mean, things like movies like Demolition Man is kind of what I was talking about as far as
the dystopian future.
They didn't really go above and beyond the way something like Blade Runner does, where you still have things that are just, you know, it's like like a gun with a weird laser pointer on it, but it's a modern day gun right now that you can just kind of put a couple attachments on. Whereas Blade Runner makes a whole new gun, you know. Whereas somebody is using a corkscrew to open a bottle in Demolition Man or something of the like, and you have this whole new device that they invent just for something like Blade Runner. I mean, Blade Runner really, really went above and beyond the call of sci-fi duty.
I would say the main difference in the universe between Demolition Man, for example, was the dystopian universe of Blade Runner. And I even think it feels more worse than the Fifth Element was the Blade Runner. You could see and feel the sense of there's no point. I think in Fifth Element, I think in Demolition Man, there was a point of hope, and that's the thing that feels missing from Blade Runner. There was no hope in the movie. You just saw people living their lives.
You're comparing two different.
I'm just giving comparisons.
Is you got Fifth Element, this chick needs to save the world. You got Blade Runner. I want you to kill these people.
I'm just comparing. Man. Just comparing the universes.
It kind of seems like you're also comparing the plots a little bit.
A little, probably.
Okay.
You are, and you know, Slum Los Angeles in 2019 isn't exactly a good cross section of the entire world, you know.
True, very true. So I don't know. I know what I want to give it, but I'm going to save it for the end.
Ryan, since you picked it, we're getting close to it. What do you
give it? Man, I gotta say it's a four. Like I'm with James, or sort of you, I guess, John, in as much as I probably won't put this one into big heavy rotation, but I can definitely see behind the curtain and see how many movies this thing has influenced over the years. And I mean, the things they got so right at a time when nobody was doing that kind of stuff. I mean, Star Wars, but set in a whole other galaxy, and they just went and shot in the Mojave Desert.
I don't believe I'm doing this. I'm giving it a 5 out of 5 for a couple of reasons. I would have never thought that, honestly. One is this movie is beyond revolutionary. I think you can see fingers of it in today's film. And you could never make this movie again. This is a specific to the time, into the feel of it. Because, you know, like today's technology, they'd make it look either beautiful or super gritty, not perfect.
And it would look too fake. It wouldn't have that lived in feel to it, that worn texture.
Everything looked used in this movie.
You can kind of add that, but in the same way that you look at things used in like Star Wars Episode One, it was like that fake used.
Yeah. No. I agree. So,
you know, I got to look at it differently than you guys. I mean, like I said, for me, after 40 minutes of this film, I'm done. And I got to look at it that way, and I've watched it 3 times. Like I said, I see the visual effects. I see all the great things that you guys are saying. But when I feel like I got to take a nap in a movie, it drops quite a bit of points. Okay, I look at it this way. It's not Hugh Jackman's Pan. It's not Dust Boot. So it gets a little over a 1.5. It goes for a 2.
Wow.
I gotta say, man, if I feel like I want to just go to sleep in the middle of a movie, there's a lot of things that it's just not doing for me. But I see your guys' point. I see for 82 that, I mean, it was so amazing. It just loses me after 40 minutes. I'm like, I'm done. I've seen it.
I do want to add one thing, and I mentioned earlier, one of the reasons I love black and white movie was the lighting. It's one of the highlights of this movie for me that I think enhanced it.
That's what it is. It's dark, and I feel like I need to go to sleep now. I'm like a bird.
I think it's a lost art, is lighting. Everything movies today, it's either super bright or the Revenant realistic color. It's not... I don't know. It's just missing something. No, movies today just cannot live up to older movies, in my opinion.
Right.
But I do get your reasoning, because it is slow. I mean, this is a very slow burn of a movie.
It's not that it's slow. It's just like after a certain point, I'm done with it. It's not the plot is boring to me. I'll finish the plot later. But it's like it's like I need a 2-hour intermission just so I can take a nap.
Do you think it blows its load too early, Zane?
I think it's kind of got the prom dress syndrome. You know, you look prettied up in the beginning, and then all of a sudden it's off, and you're like, eh. All right, you're a dude. Later.
Oh, great. Now we're going to get a lot more comments on YouTube.
Why do I shop on Castro District?
there's a whole other visual I don't want.
On a Boshed. Or whatever. Boshed. However you guys want to pronounce that.
Borscht. So this is like what, NYPD Blue, NCIS? This is a bunch of Longmire all in one?
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff thrown into the beginning episode. I mean, Ryan, did you get a chance to watch it?
No.
So John and I watched it, I think. John watched it.
Tell me on it. What's the pitch me?
It's a curveball. It's gonna hit Amber in the head.
So pretty much what it is, it's an old detective. Literally the beginning episode is this detective who you don't know, you can barely see, shoots somebody who looks like he's holding a weapon. And so pretty much the first episode is talking about how dirty this cop is, how wrong this cop is. There's a scene in the court where it goes into his history. This prosecutor says, "How many people have you killed?"
I don't know.
Yeah, and the lady
says... That was his answer.
Yeah, the prosecutor says, "You don't know? Why?" It's like, "Well, I was in Iraq, I was in here, I was in Special Forces." It's like, "Okay, how many people have you killed as a cop?" "Oh, easy, 5.
So,
and it goes downhill from
pretty
there.
Pretty much what it seems like to me, it's the network idea of Justified in L.A.
Yeah, it's okay. It's a one-man A-team.
That was
Well, Justified. I mean, you know, there's a tried-and-true... premise for a TV show. I mean, it's something we expect every couple of years, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's what it seemed like to me.
Is this a network? Who's putting this out?
I think it was ABC.
Yeah, it's one of the alphabets. That's all I was paying attention to.
I
wasn't really too impressed.
It didn't grab me.
I read a little bit of head to talk about what the descriptions of each episode were. And nothing really kind of grabs me. I mean... And it's kind of a baked over cop drama, honestly.
Well, yeah. Look, I mean, after stuff like The Wire comes out, you know what I mean? People get a little spoiled as far as the content for a good cop drama. You know, you have things that ring true with a cop drama, like cops swearing. and doing shady things. And then you see it on network, and then they're saying, oh darn, you know, we got to beat the crap out of this guy. I've never known a cop to ever say the words, we got to beat the crap out of this guy.
You weren't listening to the Ronnie King video well enough. He's still breathing. We got to beat him. Beat him.
Jeez. So we give it, it's worth seeing, you know, if you guys can get into it. It was entertaining, but definitely
if it's something up your alley, check it out. You might like it. Other than that, it was a letdown for
me. It's nothing new. It's
just I imagine take that from a couple of dudes who watch a lot of cop shows.
Yes.
Yeah.
Go
watch The Shield.
So, ladies and gentlemen, just to let you know, we do have a Facebook page. You love us, hate us. As long as you're creative, we'll read your hate mail on air and let him respond to it. So
I'll get around to it.
And so, come on, visit our Facebook page. And also, don't forget, you can pause for the cause. You can donate to Old Guy Tech TV and help keep the lights on.
And so I want to jump in on movie news because there's a little something to bring up.
Wait, can I go first real quick?
This one has pertaining to something we've already done.
Well, yes, but this is just... Okay, I'll go this because this one is too good not to pass up.
Okay, so we watched 2 weeks ago of Kings and Prophets.
Yeah.
And that one made it to episode 2 before it was pulled off by ABC. ABC canceled the show. There will not be any more
of Kings
and Prophets. They did not really go into it.
Wow.
I'm surprised they let it go to episode 2.
I'm surprised they made the show.
I was surprised by that too. But anyways, so that was just something that we had already had, and I figured it was pertaining.
So here is in the pile of, if this ever happened to me, they would never let me live it down. A man was arrested today for not returning a movie 14 years later, and you would never guess what abortion of a movie he didn't hand in.
Bowling for Columbine?
Freddy got fingered.
Oh, Jesus.
Here's the funny part. The store is closed. There was still an active warrant from 2002.
They put a warrant out on him for Freddy got fingered?
Let me clarify this one as a guy who worked at Blockbuster. I'm sorry. I know it's a corporate piece of shit.
What was? Blockbuster. Hollywood Video all the way.
It wasn't exactly the world's greatest movie store, and I'm aware of that. Anyway, what happens is after a certain amount, you know, of late fees, obviously they did away with late fees back in the day. But I mean, shit, I had people go on vacation for 2 weeks, come back to like $200 late fees. At a certain point, for the people who like refuse to pay it, we'll give it to a collection company. That company then will obviously do what they do. Actually, that's basically bought the debt. So you have somebody a lot more vested than Blockbuster, even after they close.
Because if this happened to me, I would never live this down. No. Not only the especially fact Freddy that I got arrested, figured. The fact that I decided to rent Freddy Got Figured. The best thing is Tom Green's going to help pay for the guy's whatever, but it was like a $200 fine, but it was still, he got arrested for Freddy Got Fingered. A movie so bad, the TV version's like 17 minutes long.
You know, I'm kind of thinking like...
Well, I'm sure the legal fees are going to be more than the movie cost to make.
I mean,
I hope so.
I've seen Freddy Got Figured a I've couple times. It's like, wow.
I've seen it 3 times, unfortunately.
What in the hell is... You masochistic bastards.
I've seen the full-length version twice, one with 2 different people, and one of the 17-minute version, because I wanted to see what did they do to make it TV-friendly.
So you just hated the people that you made watch it then?
No, I think they made me watch it. I think it's the other way around.
Wow, man, fool me once, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Second one's on you, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, dear God. That literally made me laugh. It was in the middle of night looking for movie news, and I was busting out laughing just for the fact, you know, I could see the guy.
I thought that was bullshit. I scroll across that kind of thing in Facebook, and I refuse to try to be sucked into clickbait, so.
I just thought it was funny, because I could imagine the guys in the jail cell. Oh, what'd you do? Oh, I robbed a car. What'd you do? I forgot to return the movie Freddy Got Fingered. It's not exactly harmed, you know, hardened criminal there.
I held on to Freddy Got Fingered for 14 years.
Yeah.
Hey, to me, that's just as asinine as, oh, I sold some weed.
So, I mean, there's really no movie news out there besides Batman bullshit.
I've got a couple of pieces just from what's been posted to Real Flix Reviews. this is kind of a leave it alone. Voltron, which is a takeoff of the Japanese cartoon Go Lion, is Netflix is making a new version of it as Voltron, the legendary defender, and kind of a cel-shaded look. I kind of wish they'd leave alone my childhood at this point.
Yeah, this is the second Voltron they've made in 8 years.
Second or third? They've done.
I think it's only second. I think you're thinking of Thundercats.
No, because they did another time. And the other one that I thought was interesting is Jeremy Renner is willing to play Hawkeye in a Netflix original series.
I'd be down for that.
I think that the word's kind of gotten around as far as Netflix's reputation with filmmakers and actors. And
yeah.
I think everyone's jumping on the bandwagon, man. It's kind of cool.
I hope so, because they officially have 2,500 less titles than they did a few years ago. They're running out of content.
But look at all the original stuff they've been coming out with. Yeah. I mean, it's almost like they're phasing out everybody else's shit in lieu of their own.
I mean, House of Cards is doing really well. But if they keep making
good stuff, I could almost care less.
Yeah, and Daredevil's doing well.
Some of the stuff they call Netflix originals isn't actually original content. I think they just bought the rights for it. There's right. a couple of comedy specials.
There are a handful of things like that. There's one that do say Netflix originals that are absolutely originals, but the ones that just have a little Netflix logo on it, just bought the rights. They've done that for a lot of comedy specials.
Yes.
Which is really, really bitching because I love stand-up comedy. And, there's dudes that you really need to know about that are on Netflix. And women. I didn't just mean to exclude. Just
you sexist dudes. Bastard.
Nah. You're not funny. I'm not laughing.
As long as it's not Judy Gold, you can completely just skip her.
I like Judy Gold. She's pretty funny. She's got her moments. I was
talking to Betty White.
Kathleen Madigan.
Burn Check. Me, Betty White. Burn me.
ladies and gentlemen, next week is the theater pick. Have we decided? Because I was going to say that's...
You're all on the Supes bandwagon.
Don't even start on that.
He loves Superman, dude.
I'm a Batman fan. So I'm saying...
He tries to buy his tights on the internet. I'm not kidding.
I should ask. So I'm thinking we should just do Superman versus Batman because it's one of the beginning of the summer blockbuster kind of season, I think.
But the title is actually Batman versus Superman.
Yeah, well, because Batman's going to win.
Superman first.
What's Batman? Yeah, shut up. I think we do that because I think this is starting into this running into the beginning of the summer blockbusters.
Yeah.
So what do you think, Ryan?
I agree. I can't wait to talk about that piece of shit. I'm sorry. I'm still a little angry.
You've seen it?
Yeah,
I've seen it.
So ladies and gentlemen, we're going to do Batman versus Superman, and we already know how one of us feels. Well, actually, probably two of us.
I haven't seen anything. I haven't even watched a trailer.
And so we got to do a TV series next week?
We can do The Colony, or we can wait till next week.
Up to you guys. I'm good for whatever.
Brian never watches them anyway. It's up to me and you.
Let's do The Colony.
All right. So The Colony, it came out this year, the beginning of January 2016. So we'll be doing Batman versus Superman. That's the way the title goes, even if John gets it wrong. And The Colony.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I gave Blade Runner a 5 out of 5. James gave it a 2 out of 5. Ryan gave it a 4 out of 5. Next week, we're doing The Colony. And as always, thank you for watching.
Goodbye. Thank you.